You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Okay, let's talk about the Flopcast.
Where every week we drink a lot of coffee and we talk about comic books,
movies,
conventions,
music,
Saturday morning cartoons.
Oh, don't forget the coffee.
Lots of weird, obscure pop culture stuff from the 70s and 80s.
And chickens. Yeah, chickens.
This will be the stupidest half hour of your week.
We guarantee it.
You can find us on the ESO Network.
And Flopcast.net.
ESO Pro Wrestling Roundtable. ESO Pro Wrestling Roundtable. Wrestling is awesome. If you buy a chair and phone on the roof, climbing up the ladder, stop the damn fans. 1, 2, 3. ESO Pro Wrestling Roundtable. ESO Pro Wrestling Roundtable. ESO. Oh, hell yeah.
Okay, hey, cats and kittens. This time, once again, for the Pro Wrestling Roundtable. I am always, as usual, and sometimes not, but most of the time, yes, your host, John Morgan Neal, and our producer, Richard Yule, and our reporter, Bon Viant, at large, Jonathan Williams. And today, Jonathan is bringing us, by the way, Jonathan comes by way of the great website, WrestlingReportCulture.com. And he is bringing us an interview with the one and only Nathan Hamilton, a.k.a. the son of Celluloid. And he will discuss the Days of the Dead show coming up and death matches as it ties in with our main subject all too well. As we're doing a little different idea this time, we're going to actually watch together a episode of ECW, episode number 194 from January 7th, 1997. And that was a heck of a lot of fun. So let's all get together and watch it together and have a good time, baby.
Hey kids, are you looking for the next exciting game that will help you walk aimlessly around staring at your phone? Well, look no further, because with the success of Pokemon Go, professional wrestler Hulk Hogan now needs your help to capture his greatest foes over his wrestling career. That's right, with Pokemon Go, now you can scour the world to find such menacing foes as the Hot Rod, Roddy Piper, Zeus, Zodiac, video cameras, bald spots, Sting, the lack of tan salons, Gawker, Earthquake, Thunderlips, lawyers, and many more. Hulk Hogan has so many foes, you won't be able to catch them all. Also, look for Hacksaw Jim Duggan's Hackymon Ho! And Angry Finks, coming soon.
All right, well, since we're talking hardcore TV and ECW, I thought it made sense to talk to my friend Nathan Hamilton, because I'm pretty sure we met either through horror movies or deathmatch wrestling or somewhere in between. And we share a lot of common interests in those realms. So welcome to the show, Nathan.
Just about everybody I know I met through horror movies or wrestling, one way or the other.
So,
how's it going, guys?
Pretty good. How are you?
Couldn't be better. Got Days of the Dead coming up. Got all kinds of excitement going. So, man, it's going awesome.
Cool. Well, definitely want to talk about that. But first, I know you're known as the son of Celluloid, and you used to have a blog and stuff like that. And just where does all that stand right now? Are you still doing that?
Son of Celluloid, one of my many monikers. Yeah, I am still doing that. I haven't posted on the blog in a while. It's still active, and I will. But right now, I'm doing most of my reviews of the site called Bloody Blue, which I do. It's basically all Blu-ray stuff, because it started out as a place to review the boutique releases like Vinegar Syndrome and Arrow and Code Red and things like that. And then he brought me on. So, of course, I'm pushing it in an independent horror direction. So I'm doing a lot of my reviews there. And I'm also on their YouTube site or their YouTube channel. But, yeah, Son of Celluloid is still active. I'm still doing stuff. And there will be more coming up. I've actually got some big plans for the whole Son of Celluloid thing coming up.
Cool. Well, what are the websites for that and for the other site you write for?
Man, the Son of Celluloid one's a little, it's like Son of Celluloid 1.blogspot. Now just Google Son of Celluloid and skip past the, three about the Clive Barker story, Son of Celluloid. And they'll say Son of Celluloid horror blog. And that's me right there. That's the easiest way. Or just go on Facebook to the Son of Celluloid page. And that's the best way to keep up with everything I'm doing. Bloodyblue.com is that site. There's also a Facebook group called Bloody Blue. You can go get on there. There's a lot of cool discussion about collecting Blu-rays and all that kind of stuff. And all of our videos and articles get posted in there. So that's probably the best way to find it.
Cool. And you mentioned Days of the Dead, which is coming up very soon in Atlanta. Of course, they do shows in other cities, but I guess this is the first one of the year, right?
Always. Yep. This is kicking off the year. We got Atlanta, then Charlotte in May, and then Indianapolis in June, and Louisville in August, and Chicago in November. I believe those are correct. I usually don't plan my life quite that far in advance, so I'm not 100% sure, but, you know. But, yeah, Atlanta's the kickoff of the year.
We'll focus on that one for now, and that is February
2nd through,
2nd
4th.
Through the 4th.
Yeah, February 2nd, my birthday. So Days of the Dead is my birthday party this year.
Awesome.
So, of course, there's always been, of course, a lot of horror content there, but wrestling has always had a presence at Days of the Dead as well. This year, Shawn Michaels is going to be there. I don't know that I've seen any other wrestling announcements.
Mean Gene.
Oh, that's right. I didn't see that just today.
I wonder how many people walk up to his table and just go, well, let me tell you something, Mean Gene. Like, Mean, woo, Gene. One of the two. I'm sure he's sick of hearing both of them.
Probably.
Yeah, well, I actually interviewed him a few years ago. I think it was when WrestleMania was in Miami the year after Atlanta, and I went down there. And he was very nice, of course.
I met him at Days of the Dead in Indianapolis, I believe it was. He's a super cool guy. Really, really nice dude.
Yeah, and he's not really playing a character on TV. That's pretty much who he is.
That is Gene.
So, anyway, I know you attended the first few Days of the Dead events in Atlanta, and now you, as of last year, I believe, was your first year being involved. How did that all come about? And let people know what you do there.
What happened was throughout, I attended the first Days of the Dead in Atlanta as press, and I was press for the first few years, and I started going to the Indianapolis show and getting a little more involved. And then they let me start hosting some panels, mainly the independent horror panel, because independent horror is kind of my thing. I'm all about, you know, waving the flag for indie horror, kind of like I am for indie wrestling. Indie everything's cool. But eventually, I decided, you know, one year I didn't get to host it. And I was looking at what was going on, and my girlfriend works for Dragon Con. And she got me to host some panels there, and I was sitting in a panel. I'm like, you know what, there's 30 different panel tracks going on right now. There are celebrities on, like, two of them, and all the rooms are packed. Why isn't Days doing this? So I got with the powers that be of Days of the Dead, and I said, hey, guys, tell you what, give me a room, give me a PA, and get out of my way. And I'll make some magic happen. And lo and behold, they did. So what we now have is the black track and the blue track. The black track is where all the celebrity Q&As happen and where the contests happen, you know, those kind of events. What I'm doing on the blue track is everything outside of that. I push indie horror. I push local talent. And there's a whole realm of stuff going on there in horror that isn't covered when you're interviewing Bill Moseley again. You know, that kind of thing. Everyone's, you know, loves to see the stars talk. It's awesome. But there's so much more out there. I have, you know, makeup panels, and I have stuff about toys and a swap meet and, you know, all kinds of awesome stuff going on there. So the blue track is my baby, and this is actually its birthday too, because we started in Atlanta last year. We've made one loop around, and now we're starting the second year, and I could not be more excited about it.
Cool. So can you tell us some of the, I know it's, you posted the schedule recently, but what are some of the panels you have scheduled this year?
Let's just run down the list here. On Friday night, starting at 8, we've got an event I call Sin and Salvation. I did this in Indianapolis, and it was awesome, so I decided I'd have to do it in Atlanta. Graveyard Gospel, after their controversial performance last year, everyone said they had to come back, so they're coming back. And what we're going to do, we're going to have them on stage with Bumpin' the Night Ghoulesque, which is a horror-themed burlesque troupe. Excuse me, a burlesque troupe from here in Atlanta. So Graveyard Gospel is going to do a couple songs, and we're going to have a burlesque number. We're going to go back and forth. It's going to be a treat for the eyes and the ears, tantalizing and possibly traumatizing. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And then at 10 o'clock, we've got the Dirty Dirty Con Con Game Show, which Phantom Troublemaker hosts. It's an institution at Dragon Con. I decided, you know what, we're going to make it horror-themed and bring it to Days of the Dead, so that's going to be a whole lot of fun. It's an adults-oriented game show, so yeah, that one's 18+. You got to have ID to get into that one. Saturday, starting at noon, we got Send In the Clowns. Catherine and Maybell, if you're not familiar with them, they are world-record-holding sideshow performers and dubbed on America's Got Talent the most disgusting couple in America. They are going to be telling us all about clowns in horror. Clowns are the big thing right now with the, you know, success of It. And they're going to be going from Lon Chaney and the Silence all the way up to Pennywise and American Horror Story all the way up through that. Then at 1 p.m., we've got Horror Makeup with Roy Woolley. You'll know him from Face Off. He's the guy with the cowboy hat. Everyone recognizes him. And that dude has done horrible things to my face for decades at Netherworld. And he's going to be teaching everyone how to make up everyone to be all kinds of ghastly. At 2 p.m., we've got the Women of Independent Horror panel. That one's going to be hosted by my friend Elizabeth Catherine Gray. It's got Brooklyn Ewing, Dana Nofke, Vanessa Ionta Wright, and Lynn Hansen. It's a lot of the badass ladies that are out there showing people that indie horror isn't a boys' club anymore. Then we got the Independent Horror Filmmakers panel next, where I'm going to be talking indie horror and films with Robert Hall, Brian Williams, Molly Coffey, and some additional guests that have yet to be announced. Then at 4, we've got Toy Stories, Plastic Horrors. That one's all about horror toys, and we got a lot of collectors out there who are really going to want to check that one out. Then the one I'm really excited about, this is kind of an innovative concept I'm trying to bring to the con scene, is the Terror Trade Swap Meet. I mean, we've all got some movies we don't want anymore. Maybe we somehow got two of them, or maybe we got the Blu-ray and don't want the DVD anymore. Maybe we just didn't like the flick. So what I want everyone to do is take that stack of movies and bring them to the Blue Track Room at 5 p.m., and we're just going to trade movies. Everyone's going to get together and swap, and it's going to be awesome. Thank you. Yeah, that's one of those that, you know, it's a little bit outside the box, and it's only going to be really cool if we get participation. So the more people that, you know, get into it, it's going to be cool. And, you know, come and check it out and leave with some good movies and get rid of some of the stuff you don't want. The only rule, no money changes hands at this event. It's all trades. That's the only rule for this whole thing. Then at 8 p.m. that night, we're doing the Southeast premiere of She Was So Pretty 2, Be Good for Goodness Sake. It's a Christmas horror movie directed by Brooklyn Ewing, and it's awesome. She Was So Pretty was great. The sequel's great. And we're going to be doing the Southeast premiere. It's the first time anyone in this area of the country has gotten to see it. And then at Sunday at 1 o'clock, we've got the Frankenthug panel. This is a movie that is coming out. Actually, I think it's making its debut at Days of the Dead. You can buy it there from a Buckshort Productions. And it's all about Satan's Own, who is a biker gang, who that you might remember. It's kind of an offshoot from Satan's Own in Frankenstein Created Bikers. Go into a town, take over the drug trade, and end up gunning down one of the local dealers. Well, he gets brought back by, we call it hood science, which basically means weed that'll raise the dead. And he comes back and goes to war with the biker gang. And the guy who plays the leader of the biker gang is a local actor by the name of Nathan Hamilton. And he's amazing in this flick. He deserves an Oscar. We're doing a panel about that. And then at 2 p.m., we've got the Atlanta Horror Authors Showcase. We've got three great authors, Nancy Collins, Jeff Strand, and Daryl Grizzle. And they're going to be reading selections from their books. So come in for story. It's story time, boils and ghouls. So, yeah, we've got all kinds of fun stuff going on the Blue Track all throughout the weekend. And as with the Black Track and the screening room, it's all included in your price of admission to Days of the Dead Atlanta.
That's awesome.
Yes, yes, very busy weekend for you.
Yeah, it always is. It's very different running a track than it was doing press or even just doing cons as a civilian. But so, you know, every now and then I'm like, oh, man, I got to host this panel while a panel I want to see is going on. But you know what? It's so rewarding. Like, the thing that got the great things are, like, there was a girl in Indianapolis who came to the territory swap meet. She was like 13, I think, and is just getting into horror movies. And I ended up training. She went home with a stack of old Val Lewton movies. I was like, cool, we can, like, here, classics, go learn. And then at one of the, you know, every now and then at the independent film panels, I'll have, so I had one guy at the Louisville who came up to me, and he had made one movie and was getting ready. He was like, man, this isn't selling. I'm not doing good. I'm done. And then after that, he's like, man, I'm so inspired after talking to these other guys. I'm going to keep going. I'm going to make more movies. And it's those kind of moments that really make what I'm doing with the Blue Track worth it and exactly what I want out of this.
Do you see it being as big as Dragon Con in a few years? I mean, obviously, this is early on. Dragon Con's been doing it for many, many years. And, I mean, their fan panels have just been getting bigger. I think I went to Dragon Con in, I think the last time I went was 2013 or 14. And everybody was like, oh, yeah, you can get into fan panels, no problem. It's the stars that people want to see. Well, I mean, the Lost fan panel was packed. It was standing room only. There was a Ghostbusters fan panel, standing room only. I mean, it's very much like a live podcast. So do you foresee Days of the Dead just growing and growing?
I see it growing and growing. I'm not sure if Dragon Con level is attainable to anyone at this point.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess
it's
in
like
comparison,
the third largest con in America.
I guess in comparison to the numbers that Days of the Dead, I don't know what the numbers Days of the Dead does as far as attendees, but do you see the fan panels having packed rooms? Did you see that last year?
Well, throughout last year, I found a lot of people at the con. Atlanta knows about what it's all about because we're used to Dragon Con. We're used to having, you know, 30, 40 things to choose from at any one time. I go to some of the other cities, and they're not used to that. They're like, wait a minute. What do you mean there's more things going on? You mean we have to choose? I mean, that kind of thing. So I think a lot of it is, this is going to sound condescending, but I don't mean it that way. It's educating the audience. And when people get used to the idea of, hey, there's more stuff to do, they get excited about it. And they start being, oh, cool, we can go do this. Or then, you know, the fan panels have slowly been getting more. And I mean, Chicago, the last show we did, had a bigger attendance than Atlanta did, which is the first one we did. So it's growing and growing. And sky's the limit, man. I only see it getting bigger and bigger.
Cool. Yeah, Knoxville, I live in Knoxville, Tennessee, and most of the conventions either don't have fan panels or they don't know how to do them properly. They usually don't dedicate a single room to it, or the room is so far off nobody can even find it anyway. So, right. Yeah, it is educating. It's very much like podcasts. I mean, most people don't know what podcasts are, so right. Fan panels are sort of the same way. But I think they're great. The interaction. I mean, I met people. You know, I mean, if you're a fan of something, you can meet other. I mean, I don't know that many people in my real life that like the things that I like. So it's nice to go somewhere where you know people like what you like and just start talking to them.
Yeah, I always say it's cool. Walking into a room full of strangers can be, if you're the right kind of person, it can be an incredibly intimidating thing. But if you go to something like a Days of the Dead, and especially like a Blue Track where it's more focused on certain topics, then you walk into that room and you already know you have common ground with everybody else in that room. So you have, you know, icebreakers and conversation starters with everyone, and they're all super cool about it. So it's, you know, it takes away any of that social anxiety of meeting new people, and it's a place where you really feel like you belong because you have something in common with everyone.
Yes, I totally agree with all that.
And you mentioned sometimes it being hard to find the rooms. The Blue Track at this one, there's the way the Sheraton is laid out, over on one side of the convention area is the celebrity room and the vendors room, which you definitely got to go check out. Over on one side, there's one hall. That's where the screening room is. That's where the Black Track is. That's where the photo ops are. And that's where the Blue Track is. So walk into that hall, and Blue Track is last room on the left.
Oh, that's awesome. has it always been at the Sheraton, Days of the Dead?
No, the first year it was in Peachtree City.
I got you.
And it moved to the Sheraton that second year, and that's been our home since then.
I think I was at the Sheraton, yeah.
When I yeah, went. Richard Peachtree City is just south of Atlanta. So the year that you went, it was in Atlanta at the Sheraton.
Okay. Yeah, that place, the I probably went earlier on in its life, and I was really confused. They had a lot of different places, and I just remember, like, walking over to another place, and it was like, whoa, all this is here, and then, like, whoa, all this is here. So, definitely a cool place.
The Sheraton is a huge hotel. And at least, you know, we're starting to get there, but it's one of our bigger hotels. And in the smaller hotels, we take over the entire thing, like in Indianapolis and Chicago and places like that. At the Sheraton, there are two different areas for conventions. So there's always two conventions going on at once. Once it was a yoga instructor's convention going on at the same time for us. One time there was a teacher's convention. One time there was some kind of religious convention. That one was really interesting. You'd get some weird mixes in elevators and stuff like that.
That's awesome.
I mean, I go walking through, you know, I'm loading up my luggage and I'm wheeling a luggage cart with a chainsaw hanging off of it. And these people are just, you know, staring at me. And then you could tell the people who were there for Days of the Dead are like, oh, cool. Nice chainsaw, man. And just keep walking. You
know? Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So, so outside of that, I know you also from wrestling, you did commentary for Monstrosity Championship Wrestling.
Absolutely, needs to come back. That was so much fun.
Yeah.
The voice of Monstrosity Championship Wrestling.
Right here.
Yep.
But you also do, is it called Hardcore Cup? Or
The Carnage Cup.
Carnage Cup.
That's for I do Carnage Cup for IWA Deep South. I do Southern Slaughter and the Double Death Tournament for Milestone, which is based out of Charlotte. But this year, we're actually the Carnage Cup is postponed because we're dealing with state athletic commissions. Don't get me started on that. But what IWA Deep South is going to be doing for now, we've got something coming up. It's April 27th and 28th. And we're calling it the SSI, the Super Stiff Iron Man Tournament. It's basically Southern Strong Style. So we have a list of 18 guys who are going to get in there and just beat the ever living crap out of each other. And it's a lot of names from the deathmatch scene. We got freak shows coming in. John Wayne Murdoch, Reed Bentley, Corporal Robinson, Brandon Lee, used to be known as Deranged. We got Insane Lane. Chip Day is going to be part of it. We've got all kinds of people coming in for this, and it's going to be an amazing show. I remember at Carnage Cup 10, Tank and Corporal Robinson had a deathmatch where they didn't touch a weapon until the last minute of the match. They just beat the hell out of each other, and it was one of the most violent matches of the tournament. So that's what I'm expecting from this one. It's going to be insane violence, which is of course my thing. That's why they call me the voice of Southern violence. That's my kind of what I go by as my name when I'm doing these kind of things. But that's going to be an incredible show. It's going down in Kellyton, Alabama. Like I said, it's April 27th and 28th. And just go to Facebook and check out IWA Deep South, and you can get all the information about that.
What some people may not realize is one of WWE's biggest stars was a deathmatch contender in Dean Ambrose. John Moxley was famous in deathmatches.
Yeah, I'll tell you another one. She's on SmackDown right now. Her last name is Logan. I cannot remember what her first name there is now. She was Crazy Mary Dobson on the Indies.
Oh, yes, yes.
You know who I'm talking about.
Crazy Mary Dobson I've heard of. I think...
Sarah Logan, that's her name on WWE TV. Yeah, and she, you know, she's out there, you know, on Tuesday nights. But back at Carnage Cup 7 was the first time that we had a Nathan Sadistic Playground match. And that's when I make all the weapons. I've made stuff over the years. I made a board of 666 syringes. Thumbtack nunchucks. I had a barbed wire cat of nine tails tipped in light bulbs. I've had... I had a power drill with a fork in it. Like, just crazy stuff.
Man.
They give me carte blanche. The meanest thing I ever made. It was a board covered in balloons. And I filled the balloons with salt and lemon juice. They hated me for that one. But at Carnage Cup 7, I made what I called the deathbed. I took a queen-size bed frame, and I took the mattress off, and around the rails, I wrapped an entire spool of barbed wire to where... You didn't go through this thing. It caught you. You had to be lifted out of it. You know who the first person who took a bump into that was?
I'm guessing Sarah Logan.
Sarah Logan. that crazy chick was the first one into the deathbed. So there have been, she is the only person currently on WWE TV who has fallen victim to one of my weapons.
That's pretty cool.
But yeah, Dean Ambrose used to do some crazy stuff. Like,
yeah.
And look at Drake Younger. He was one of the most renowned deathmatch wrestlers on the scene, and now he's one of the referees in NXT.
Oh.
Yeah. So the deathmatch wrestlers are doing well for themselves.
I mean, we don't really cover deathmatch wrestling on the show. We never really have talked about it. Why do you like deathmatches? Like, what about a deathmatch? And maybe briefly describe what a deathmatch is. Violence, pretty much. I mean, and lots of blood.
What a deathmatch is, it's basically wrestling with weapons. We'll do do stuff like take down the ropes and put up barbed wire instead, or put thumbtacks all over the ring, or put light tubes everywhere in the ring, or do matches where some of the weapons I described, do some crazy stuff like that. And it's what I love about it is I love wrestling because are we maintaining kayfabe on this show?
As much as possible.
Yeah, somewhat.
Okay. I love wrestling for the performance that these guys go out and do and the lengths they are willing to put their bodies through for the fans. And when I look at deathmatch wrestling, I see the same thing as I love suspension shows, body modification, things like that. People who do extreme things with their body for the sake of their art and the entertainment they love to give to the fans. And that's what I see in deathmatch wrestling. These guys are just like your normal wrestlers, but they are willing to take it that much farther because the fans want it. And the camaraderie you see at a lot of these shows is very different from what you see at the normal wrestling show because, a lot of the wrestling shows, these are the performers, these are the fans, and there the twain shall meet unless it's at the gimmick table. This one, it's like everyone after the show parties together. It's such a community. And it's, I've super glued these guys shut before. I love the sense of community. And the fans, it's kind of like horror fans are different from normal movie fans. You don't see romantic comedy conventions.
Yeah, it's true.
It's a very, we're a very more close-knit and much more fanatical fan base.
Although and my wife would attend a Hallmark Christmas movie convention, I think.
Coming soon to Rom-Com Con. A Notebook cast reunion. But, anytime you go into any of the extreme lengths of any of the forms of entertainment, extreme metal or, hardcore punk or extreme horror or anything like that, you find the fans who are so passionate because you have to be to even find that stuff. And the passion of the fans and the passion of the wrestlers and, like I said, the lengths they go to do what they do just fascinates me.
Yeah, definitely. And
plus, I'm just a sick, sadistic freak and I love blood. If you want to be downright honest about it.
I mean, do these guys go to the hospital afterwards? Is there medics on the at the area? Do they get stitched up or do they just super glue it and go home?
We do have medics on hand for extreme injuries, but the standard line is stitches are for bitches. So, yeah, you generally, unless you're, about to bleed out, you don't go to the hospital. You just, glue yourself shut and you're good. Wear the scar with pride, man.
That is definitely a camaraderie that you don't see in most sports.
Right. Yeah, it's not for everybody. It really is. I mean, there's a lot of people who are, that's not wrestling, blah, blah, blah. But, it really is. It's just a different form of it.
Oh, I would definitely love to. I've never seen it live. I've seen it on YouTube and such. But I would love to see it live at least one time to make a call whether I would like to see it live again,
And it's so much fun to do commentary on, too.
I bet.
It's funny, the way I started doing commentary on that was funny because, not sure exactly how much of the story I'm allowed to tell, but at Carnage Cup 7, one of our commentators had been talking to a certain wrestler's girlfriend online, and said wrestler got himself booked on the show for the specific purpose of coming and, taking care of business and being the crap out of said commentator. Well, said commentator got wind of this and did not show up. So the Nathan's Sadistic Playground match is coming up, and the promoter comes up. He's like, hey, we're down a commentator. You want to do commentary on your match? And I was three sheets to the wind at this point. And I'm like, yeah, sure, let's do it. So I called my match, and he's like, hey, that was pretty good. You want to just do the rest of the show? I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? And I've called every IWA Deep South match since then. So, and I ended up out of that doing Milestone, and out of that doing Monstrosity Championship Wrestling. So I make I always say I'm the Deathmatch Gordon Solie. Not because I think I'm that good, because I am in no way arrogant enough to compare myself to the best of all time. But just because, just like Gordon Solie, I've never called a match sober.
That's good.
And why would, I mean, I don't know what kind of venues these deathmatch shows are in, but
never the same one twice.
I'm sure, yeah. But
you have to sucker them into putting the show there, and then the venue's like, what was that?
They come out to watch the show and they're horrified. like we can't do certain, like we can't do most gyms because that rubberized floor, all that broken glass will tear it up. we have to be very careful about where we go. Like, you know, we've done VFW halls. We've done a lot of shows outside. We've done, you know, stuff like that. Like Milestone, for example, up in Charlotte, we did the Southern Slaughter tournament, and we get to the venue, and it's in the middle of the summer in North Carolina, and we find out the AC is broken. It's like 110 degrees in that VFW hall. There's no way that's happening. So out back behind the parking lot, there's this wooded area, and there's just this ring of trees with this big open space in the middle, which is just big enough for a ring. And so it was great. We put the ring out there, and the chairs fit right between the trees, and it's one of the most unique settings for a wrestling show I've ever been in. And the atmosphere was great. It worked awesome. And we had dudes dropping elbows out of trees.
Oh, man.
All kinds of cool stuff. We had, you know, light tubes taped to the trees and people getting Irish whipped into them. All kinds of great stuff.
That's great.
So, you know, we work with what we got, and sometimes it just works out perfectly like that.
So you, I think the deathmatch stuff is the best example of the marriage, I guess, of horror and wrestling. But there's a lot of crossover there. As I mentioned earlier, Days of the Dead, there's always at least one guest that's a wrestler there. Why do you think there's such, it kind of ties into what you were just talking about a minute ago with the camaraderie of any fan of extreme, of anything that's extreme or hard to find in the mainstream? But why do you think wrestling and horror seem to go so well together?
I've talked to a lot of people about this, and there's a few.
It'd be
different
a good
things.
Panel, by the way. I'd be happy to be on it.
I will definitely keep that in mind. But I mean, first of all, yeah, you've got both of them are really outsider art forms, because you know you have a lot of people who look down on wrestling. You know, you have a lot of people who don't see it for what it is and say, like, oh, you watch wrestling, but it's, you know, and it's the same thing with horror movies. So you have that aspect, but you also have that basically it all boils down to a battle of good and evil. You know, what are Freddy and Jason and Michael Myers except great heels?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's the over the top personalities, and it's that struggle between good and evil. And it's basically the same types of stories just told two different ways, one live, one on screen. And I think that attracts, you know, kind of the same. And plus, violence. We all love violence, right? And both of the, you know, horror movies and wrestling are both violent entertainment.
Right. What was it that attracted you to these two things? Like, how early on in your life were you interested in horror movies and wrestling?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I think it's because as a kid, I wasn't allowed to watch either of them. So that made them that much more attractive.
Right.
I discovered wrestling because, you know, like being from Atlanta, 6:05 Saturday night, man. And I was just flipping through, and I remember the first thing I ever saw was Ricky Steamboat. He was against some jobber, and he was jumping off the top rope. I'm like, whoa, that looked dangerous. That was cool. I want to see more of that. And then Ric Flair came out, and the Andersons came out, and Sting. I loved Sting. Sting was my dude. And from there, I saw Cactus Jack. That's what ended up leading me into ECW, which we'll get into later. And then horror movies is the same way. I caught Night of the Living Dead on TV one night when I was 12, and it changed my world. It was like, okay, because I was a preacher's kid, so horror was not cool in our house.
Oh, wow.
So I saw that, and I'm like, oh, there are people who make the kind of entertainment I want to watch? Really? I've never seen this before. I got to see more of it. And, you know, wrestling and horror movies were both, you know, became my twin obsessions. Just from when I discovered them as a kid, and something about them just grabbed my imagination. Like I said, I think it was the violence. I think it was the over-the-top character. I mean, when I was a kid, Ric Flair was the coolest dude on the face of the earth. I mean, I would boo him to high heaven when he was fighting Sting, but against anyone else, dude, you are the man. I even knew, that's the real world champ. You know, riding in limousines and got the pretty women and the Rolex and the whole nine. It's like, every kid wants to be that, you know? So it's, you know, there's nothing about them that isn't attractive to me.
Yeah, you made an excellent point about horror movies. They're heels, so, you know, and you generally hate the baby faces in horror movies, so.
Right, exactly. you'll have that one every now and then that you cheer, but yeah. The cool heels are the horror movie slashers. Mm-hmm. Brandy and Jason, they're the Bullet Club. That's exactly. Ooh. I just or got a parody t-shirt idea. I'm going to hold on to that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all about the baby faces and heels in horror movies, because you can't really have what the stronger one is, the stronger it makes the other. I mean, you can have Freddy, and Freddy's a cool character, but would it really have been as effective if Nancy hadn't been a great character too?
You're correct, yeah. Yeah, you got to have strong, and that's why some horror movies don't work, is because they don't do that balance.
Exactly. If you have a cool killer, but all the people he kills are like, God, this guy sucks. I want him to die. You want that for some of them, but you want to care about some of them.
Well, that's the Nightmare remake. That's what I had a problem with. You know, all the kids were just terrible. I mean, the character, not the acting or anything, it's just the character development and stuff. None of them were strong.
I disagree. The guy, the Jackie Earle Haley, is a great actor, but he was a terrible Freddy.
I liked him. I didn't mind it. I mean, Freddy is just, it's like Pinhead. I mean, they're so iconic with the actors.
The way I see it, you put the coat and the hat on anyone else, they're not going to buy him as the Undertaker.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah, I mean, they tried
that for a little while.
With Brian Lee, who we'll talk about again later.
Right. We'll talk about him later.
That's what you call a segue, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I don't know. In wrapping up, is there anything else you want to mention or talk to Nathan about, Jonathan?
No, I think that's it. I was going to ask about the film, the biker game film, but you already mentioned it'll be premiering at Days of the Dead, so that tied into there really well.
Yes, it will. That was a really interesting shoot, because shortly before we started shooting that, I herniated two discs in my back.
Oh.
And I couldn't get around without crutches. So there was a lot of sitting in my chair, call action, get up, do the scene, and then collapse back down. So it's, if I look like I'm in pain in some of those scenes, it's real. I'm method acting. So, but the way I see it, I figured Christopher Lee shot Horror of Dracula with three broken ribs. So I wasn't about to let a couple of herniated discs stop me from filming this movie.
Nice.
And now you're doing DDP yoga, right?
Yeah, I had started doing DDP yoga a while back. And I love it. Like, I despise working out. And this was the first workout I'd ever done that really got me energized. Because, it's not that you feel like, everyone talks about when you work out and get a good workout and you feel awesome afterwards. I had never experienced that. I was always like, oh, this sucks. But that was awesome. And then I hurt my back and I couldn't do it. And then DDP Yoga just put out a new program called Rebuild. which it's based on. You remember Arthur, the disabled veteran, that he had the famous video with that? It's based on what he did, where he modified it, where he did it in bed, and then he worked his way up to using a chair, and then he worked his way up to standing. And it's workouts that you can do in bed or on a chair. And with me still trying to do rehab, and I'm still, you know, I'm kind of alternating between crutches and a cane right now, considering if I'm having a bad day or a good day. But I've started doing that, and I can already feel my back starting to feel better, and I can feel, you know, rebuilding my legs after being on crutches for so long. And man, DDP yoga, I kind of laughed at it at first because back at Days of the Dead, the year you were there when they did the Devil's Rejects cast reunion, I interviewed him. And I kept trying to ask him Devil's Rejects questions.
Oh, he won't.
Don't. All yoga.
Yeah.
I used to have a YouTube show, and I put together a gag reel for it, and I cut together every time he said the words DDP yoga in that interview. And the interview itself is like 5 minutes long. The clips of him just saying DDP yoga over and over are like 2 minutes and 40 seconds.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of like, oh God, what kind of gimmick is this? And then, you know, I saw the videos and all, and I'm like, well, I have a, you know, torn up knee, and this is supposed to be no impact. Let me try this. And I tried it and I love it. So I swear by DDP yoga now.
So does DDP.
Yeah.
If you get a little more time with him, he will gladly talk about his other endeavors, but he always has to get the DDP yoga stuff in first.
Oh yeah, definitely. And for good reason, because I mean we've all seen what it did for Jake. We've all seen what it did for Scott Hall and all those guys. And it's a great thing. It changes lives, and I'm in the process of getting my mobility back with DDP yoga. So I know I sound like an infomercial, but yeah, everyone out there, I recommend you try it.
Well, you live close enough that you could have. Have you been to the Performance Center in Smyrna?
I thought I should, though, because my girlfriend lives in Smyrna. she lives like 4 miles from it, so I need to get up there at some point. I just haven't been able to at any time, but I need to get up there at some point. Stevie Richards is actually teaching there right now.
Yeah, I knew he was. I wasn't sure if he still was, because I saw that he's now like training an MMA fighter or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
At least until very recently, he was.
Yeah, he was there whenever I was there a few times.
Nice.
They had an open house thing last weekend that I started to go to, but I didn't make it up there. I live south of Atlanta, and it's north of Atlanta, so.
Right.
Anyway.
But as I discovered, Jonathan, Atlanta traffic is a dream.
Yeah.
Took me 50 minutes to get somewhere that was 20 minutes away.
It's one of those Freddy Krueger style dreams.
Oh gosh, it's awful. This was just a month ago or so.
Yeah, the land traffic is an absolute nightmare, but hey, it's worth it to brave it to come to stuff like Days of the Dead and go to the DDP Performance Center. I mean, there's great stuff going on, so you know, get out there and brave that traffic. There's enough cool stuff. Don't let it bother you.
Yeah.
And I guess we should mention daysofthedead.com is the website, and it has information on the Atlanta event as well as all the other upcoming ones. Is there a website for what's the name of the film that's like a spinoff of Frankenstein Created Bikers?
Oh, Frankenthug.
Is there a website for that?
I don't believe there's a website, but I know there's a Facebook page. So there's a Frankenthug page, and there is a Buckshort Productions page, which is the company that made it, that was a pleasure to work with. Those guys are great. So, yeah, get on Facebook, check out Frankenthug.
And if you haven't, check out Frankenstein Created Bikers, because Nathan is also in that, and I even have a trading card of him.
Yeah, that was interesting. I never, ever thought I'd be a trading card. But, yeah, that was fun. It's funny. I went over to Jimmy Bickert, the director. I went over there to sign a bunch of my cards because they gave them away with the Kickstarter, and I signed 200 of them, but we were sitting out, he has a drive-in in his backyard, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And we were back there imbibing some adult beverages and maybe a lot of them. And it's funny, you can see my signature deteriorate as the cards go on. Like, the first one I signed looks nothing like the last one I signed.
That's funny.
But yeah, Frankenstein Created Bikers is an awesome movie. You should check it out. My favorite thing about that is it was shot on Super 35 millimeter. You don't see that anymore.
Nice. Yeah. No,
you know, it might be the last, you know, it might be the last independent film you ever see shot on 35mm, because digital is completely taken over and you can't even project 35mm most places. So that made that, in addition to it just being a really cool movie, I think that is one of the things that really makes it special.
You were not in Dear God No, though, right?
No, I was not in Dear God No. That was shot while I was still in Savannah. I actually, at the Dear God No premieres where I met the cast and crew of Dear God No, and so they put me in the sequel, and then I ended up getting cast in the spinoff, so I'm tied into the universe now.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I think Dear God No screened at the very first Days of the Dead
when
I was in District City.
And it was during that screening that Gary Busey pulled a knife on me, but that's a story for another time.
Who hasn't Gary Busey pulled a knife on? Let's be honest.
Right. You've got a point there.
Well, yeah, Nathan, well, it's been great talking to you, and you're going to stay on the show, too, and help us with our next segment.
Yeah, I was a huge ECW fan back in the day, so I'm excited to talk some old vintage ECW.
It is definitely vintage, I'll say that.
It's about as 90s as it gets.
Yes.
All right, man, yeah, this has been a blast, and yeah, bring on ECW.
Extreme Championship
Cats and kittens, we're here once again, and this time we're doing something very special, a new concept, new idea that brought to us by our own and only Richard Yule, our producer. I, of course, am always your host, John Morgan Neal. Of course, as always, we have our third head of the dragon, our reporter at large, or Bob Leon, Jonathan Williams, and our guest that we've interviewed earlier tonight has elected to stay with us, and our usual participant, Mr. Jerry Chandler, is joining us tonight. And tonight, we're all going to watch ECW Hardcore TV number 194 from January 7th, 1997. And we're going to all be watching along and making comments, so on and so forth. And when you listen to this, you can cue it up, and we will give you, you know, a spot and tell you when to start. And you could go along with us or not. You could just listen to us, you know, ramble about it. this is back really in the heyday of ECW. A lot of great stuff was going on. Some great feuds was going on. And and for me personally, the both Terry Funk and the Blue World Order were right down my alley. So anyway, that's what we're going to do. So sit back and enjoy. And
before we get started, can Richard, can you tell us why this is what we're watching and why we're doing commentary on this particular episode?
Sure. So when I brought the idea, I think I mentioned it on the last episode. I'll do this real quick so we can get started. But I didn't really want to do a pay-per-view. I mean, that's what a lot of other shows do. Conrad, more famously, Conrad and Tony Schiavone, they queue up an entire pay-per-view, and I didn't really want to go that long. I just thought the ECW would be perfect because they're an hour show, really about 45 minutes. And I really just picked this show because it's the... I mean, it was I wanted a January show that was roughly around the same time as right now. So I didn't know anything about it. It was pretty much by random outside of being January. So I mean, and so I was
something that was basically 20 years ago.
Yeah.
21 years ago.
21. Yeah, it is 21. Oh, you screwed up.
I wanted it to be drinking age, okay?
It's legal now.
It's legal. It's barely legal.
All right. So, John, you want to count us off? We'll give everybody, like John said, you can either watch it with us or not. It'll be fun either way.
All right. Well, tell everybody at home what image roughly we all have it paused on. So
well,
they can
it's the very beginning.
Terry Funk is on the edge of the apron holding onto the rope, and he's got a white towel in his one hand.
There's sad piano music.
Yeah. And a horrible, horrible replacement for the Eagles song Desperado.
This was Terry Funk's 12th retirement tour.
Yes. So that's where we're at. And we do warn you that the music is horrible on there. It's the only music that actually original music gets retained is the Blue World Order's music, because it was actually original. So there we go. All right. Let's count it down. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Happy New Year.
All right. Yeah. Y'all mentioned it. I think most of us watched it before this, because I wanted us to do that for the simple fact of the music, because as we know on the WWE Network, most of the music is awful.
Yes.
Awful.
Yeah, and it takes something. Especially, I noticed in the Sandman entrance.
Oh yeah,
that's the worst. That's the worst for me.
Well, that one and the Gangsters, which their music always played throughout the entire match,
right?
And so it just
Or anytime RVD's on the show. We got Terry Funk
bleeding right now,
which means it's 10 seconds into the match.
I didn't know we started.
Yeah. Is this and a drinking game?
The fake Undertaker beating up on Terry Funk.
Yeah.
Man, I always thought Brian Lee was a really underrated talent. He was really.
He's one of those. I was sitting watching this, the other night, and I was like, "Yeah, this is a guy that really should have been a bigger star. He really, really should have been."
Yeah,
he did really well in Smoky Mountain. He was doing well, used well here, and then. And then when he got to WWE, like so many, he just kind of lost his way.
Well, I didn't realize he also was the fake American Badass Undertaker. I just remember him as the fake.
Well, he was running with Crush's group when they were feuding with. It was like all the different gangs, the Nation, Los
the
Farides,
Disciples of Apocalypse,
the Disciples of Apocalypse,
Los Boricuas.
Couldn't have just got the rights to this song for the credits?
Of course not.
And we missed that. Terry Funk did a moonsault under the outside, which was incredible. Yeah. I mean, at his age, especially at this time.
Yeah.
He's probably, 60 here, maybe?
I mean,
I mean, Terry Funk has looked like he was 60 since he was 35. So it's kind of hard to tell.
This music is their original music, because it was actually written for them by some friend of theirs. So it wasn't something they were borrowing. This is actually original music for them.
I remember on the ECW CD, it was credited to Harry Slash and the Slash Tones.
Yep.
Yes. I was a fan of Stevie Richards and Blue Meanie all the way along. But this, when they hit on this, it was just... It really, really took off. And the only reason that it stopped was because Steve Richards got severely injured and then went to WCW. But it was over, man. They were over like Rover.
Yeah.
The only problem I have with them is this is the reason I can't do BWO shirts for the blue track at Days of the Dead. Because WWE still has the damn copyright.
Yeah.
and they really used the copyright, but...
This whole gimmick actually elevated Stevie to the main event, so it helped him a lot.
Right before this, they were basically Raven's flunkies.
Yeah.
So
well, they still are. They at least
this point.
The commentary indicates that they're like an offshoot of Raven's Nest.
Yeah, they're still in Raven's Nest officially at this point, but
yeah, they're feuding with like the rest of the Nest.
The Nest is so weird.
Yeah, they started Ray. I started feuding with Ryan Lee. Yes.
And this is a very long.
As opposed to way of being, I completely forgot it was ever called the Nest. I just automatically think Flock.
Flock. Yeah.
Yep. Originally it was Nest. There's the Sandman.
BWO in Times Square.
Back when Times Square was seedy.
I would love to be there, like, with all the other people that had no idea what was going on. Blue Meanie's belly hanging out of his shirt and Stevie Ray in those shorts.
It's Times Square. No one thought twice about it.
That's true.
They just, like, threw some change at him.
It's like they were wearing more than the Naked Cowboy, so nobody looked twice.
Right.
This show is
this is great.
The super kick on Santa.
Boom! Bah humbug.
You can tell they're in Philadelphia. In New York.
And if you really want to get sad, you could count the number of people that are alive now on this show.
Well, here's our first dead wrestler.
Yeah.
Axel Rotten was another one that was really underrated. I mean, everyone knew him as the, you know, hardcore cheer swing of Free Balls Mahoney's tag team partner. But I remember watching a couple of matches. There was one at a show at the Tabernacle I went to where he wrestled Little Guido. And they chain wrestled for like 10 minutes.
Wow.
It was ridiculous. I'm like, I had no idea Axel could do that, you know?
Well, that was a weird thing with a bunch of wrestlers where it's like they found a gimmick that worked for them and was more popular than what they were doing. And so they went with that gimmick, and his was he became kind of a brawler. But he had a fundamental wrestling base, and you can find those matches. And I hate to bring up this name because we're doing ECW, but it's one of the ones that I know I can point to matches, and it freaks out people I know who are more casual wrestling fans. It's like, I'll tell them, look up a Hulk Hogan Japanese match.
Oh, yeah. Watch them throw drop kicks. Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden you see Hulk Hogan, who is like, oh, he only knows four moves and barely knows a wrist lock from a wristwatch. And you're like going, that's Hulk Hogan? What the, you know?
But this guy right here is my number one influence as far as my commentary goes.
I mean, awesome. he is really one of the best, I believe. I
love
credit.
Joey. I just love Joey. Yeah.
And I always thought he's the only one doing commentary. It's so good. Like, you don't need four people. You only need three people. Two people is good.
He's great on his own, but I loved it when Joel joined him.
Yeah.
But he didn't need Joel or anybody else.
No,
but.
This whole night he has some great one-liners.
Yes,
just him.
Yep.
In my opinion, the greatest commentary team that never happened. Can you imagine in a booth Joey Styles and Bobby Heenan?
Oh, that would have been awesome.
Oh, that would have been
awesome. That would be great.
That would have been the greatest commentary team of all time.
Because Joey is great because he can play just totally straight. Like, just he's a great play-by-play guy.
See, Blue World Order had this before S.H.I.E.L.D. did.
Yeah. How are they getting down?
They go all the way around and go down the steps.
Think about that. Wouldn't it be cool if we came out on the balcony?
It's an ECW crowd. They're lucky they weren't thrown down.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it was New Jack, he would have just jumped.
this was in Delaware, wasn't it? This particular God. Show?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
What they said.
I think it was.
They make references to like New England and such, but I'm not sure exactly where this show is taking place.
It conveniently went to a commercial break, so we didn't see how they got down from the balcony.
Right.
I hated that ECW fan cam, too. I did not like that, which is totally 90s. I mean, they were all doing it with the, what was the G cam or whatever Goldust had?
Yeah.
GTV.
Yeah.
What was that from, inspired by the Blair Witch Project or something?
Yes. God, I look back at this and just see the way it was shot, and I'm like, this was so cool at the time. We're like, this looks awesome, and now I look back, I'm like, oh my god, this is horrible. Why are they doing this?
Yeah,
but it was so different at the time, and that's what kind of set ECW apart.
Blair Witch didn't come out till like 99, I don't think. So
yeah, you're right.
I love like how the entire Blue World Order is running from Axel.
He's a big dude in fishnets. Run.
Yeah, run.
I love Stevie on the top of the turnbuckle.
Oh!
Yeah, and you got the crotch right in the face.
Well, that's just lewd. My dearly departed friend, who went to a memorial for this Sunday, would have loved that.
That was the part of the show that does not represent the network.
Yeah. No,
the face humping.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. It also said it was rated something for sexual content.
There it was,
right there. When I think sexual content, what I think is not Stevie Richards face humping Axel Rotten.
Yeah, especially in ECW, there's plenty of sexual content.
Right.
ECW that didn't involve fan cam.
I wonder which fan got to do that.
I know.
Do they just pass it around?
Knowing ECW, maybe.
The regular camera with the stupid font over it.
Why with the Daisy Dukes, do they keep just shooting straight up his non-existent pants?
There's the tiny whities.
That shot was just nuts.
Okay.
Will you stop? So how do you think Bobby the Brain Heenan would have been as an ECW commentator?
I don't think he would have had any idea what to do.
Yeah, he would have been out of his element, probably.
I mean, we saw how bad he freaked out when Pillman grabbed him. When someone came and snatched the table out from in front of him, he would have freaked out.
Well, yeah, no, that part of it he had a problem with, but...
Okay, that was a very disturbing pin attempt.
There's some more sexual content.
Yeah.
But Bobby probably would have approached it pretty much the same way Jerry Lawler did, in that he just would have insulted the entire, you know, way that ECW was, and just the general.
So style. He would have been perfect.
Yeah, he would have had to, because it was the only way. He was always best as a heel announcer, and the best way to be a heel announcer in ECW would be to insult ECW.
You know, it always drove me crazy about the Jerry Lawler thing, and I get it. I know what Jerry was doing, I know what they were doing, but it's like, as a wrestling aficionado, I knew that the birth of ECW comes from freaking Memphis. So the last person in the world that's going to have anything to say against ECW would be Jerry Lawler, and of course, in reality, he didn't, but because he is who he was for the WWF at the time, or WWE, he was the guy that came in and, you know, called it extremely crappy wrestling, all this and the other. But hardcore wrestling was born in Memphis.
Let's pull the room here. Who has the worst shorts in this match?
Axel.
It's very subjective.
Axel's were basically boxers.
Yeah. It's beyond that, and I just hate that kind of plaid. So.
Oh.
Which one? He's got two or three kinds on his shorts.
Hey, you know, and whether the aesthetic appeals to you or not, I mean, you know, Steve Richards actually looks good in his shorts. He's a you know, fit young man. Unlike his good buddy, Blue Meanie.
He really pulls it off, doesn't he?
Yeah. Nobody could pull off a pair of Daisy Dukes like Stevie Richards.
That's correct.
Least on the men's roster.
Oh.
And I know it's not ECW, but we probably won't ever talk about it. But I loved him in Right to Censor.
Oh yeah.
I love Right to Censor.
Right to Censor does not get its.
Now we have to do a whole show about Right to Censor.
Yeah,
that might be my favorite character he ever had.
Yeah. It's definitely mine.
If the rumors are true, we may get to see a lot of Right to Censor stuff because supposedly Ivory's going to be the female inductee for the Hall of Fame this year.
Oh, really?
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So.
Although I did like the Dr. Stevie character that he did with Abyss back in a few years.
Yeah, that was fun.
Of course, my favorite is Blue World Order, but you know, I love everything Stevie's ever done. I've been a fan of Stevie since the first time.
I feel he is very underrated. He doesn't get talked much.
Yeah,
talked about much.
There's Simon Dean giving him diet tips.
Yeah, unfortunately, my understanding is that you know he kind of went through several periods where he burnt a lot of bridges, which is probably why a lot of the existing powers that be really don't promote Stevie Richards stuff that much. So
I totally forgot Nova was Simon Dean, by the way.
Yeah. Oh god, Nova. Yep. And there's like Stevie Richards, there's another guy who was actually really talented and just never seemed to get used right when he went almost anywhere.
You know what's funny? Look at these three guys. Who probably had the best run in the WWE? Blue Meanie. No one would expect that.
And he's got his own action figure now.
Oh, yeah. Really? I want a Blue Meanie figure.
Yeah, talk to Chris DiPetrillo from Figures Toy Company. There's the plug. Because they have a Legends line, and he's in it.
Yeah, I saw that the other day online, and I thought it was a bootleg or something.
Nope.
And then I looked, and I was... Yeah,
I think New Jack's in it, Jim Cornette. Yeah, the Legends line is cool.
Yeah, I like Cornies, too.
Man, later on when he was doing commentary and all, he got goofy in the WWE. But back then, it was easy to believe Taz was legit the baddest man on the
Taz
planet.
I love Taz. Taz was fantastic.
And I think the sound, thank goodness the sound is down and I can't hear Fonzie's whistle.
Yeah, but Fonzie is great. I loved him.
Oh, Fonzie's fantastic. I loved Fonzie.
And this gimmick right here that they're doing with Taz is equally awesome. He can't use his arms, so he gets other people to fight for him, and just terrific.
Yes, beat me if you can, survive if I let you, is easily like top five catchphrases in wrestling history.
It really is. Yeah. Oh, I mean, when he first went into WWF at the time, I was excited, and then he stayed.
Oh, he turned Angle the first night.
Yeah. His debut was great, and then they basically screwed the pooch on it 6 ways from Sunday. But
and see, this show is very ADD because we don't know why Bubba Ray and D-Von were fighting, but he did a great Bubba cutter on D-Von.
Look how skinny Gertner is there.
Gertner is tiny there.
And how unskinny Bubba Ray was.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, I'm not sure, but is this maybe
sexual
not
content
right before Bubba turned heel? And that because D-Von originally started out as a heel and was after Bubba when he first come, you know, into the Dudleys. He was wanting to make Bubba tough and he thought that the Dudleys were too much of a joke and he wanted to change that. Mm.
Well, this had to be before because later on the show we see him tagging with Spike.
Yes.
Spike, yeah.
True. I don't know how they could think it was a joke. that was one of the things I used to think was funny is people would be talking about, and it was weird.
I love this part with the Shane grabbing the ref. Terrific heel work.
It was weird. People would talk about
catfight.
I can't do it.
ECW.
Yeah, we didn't get that.
People would talk about ECW, and it's like, oh. It's like the hardcore. We don't do the whatever. And at the same time I'm hearing that, it's like Bubba Ray Dudley is doing like a dance-off with somebody, you know? And I'm like, okay, come on, guys. It's it has its extremes, but come on. It's just as goofy as the rest of it.
By the way, this was a badass tag team.
The Eliminators?
The Eliminators, yeah.
Oh, man. I was a big Perry Saturn fan.
I love John Cronus, man. A dude that size doing some of the acrobatic stuff he was doing, just amazing.
And he is also no longer with us, right?
Yeah, rest in peace,
John Cronus. Yes, Cronus is gone, yes.
Saturn's a sad story these days,
too. A while ago when we saw Chris Candido, he's gone, too, of course.
Yeah. Candido.
Here you got the substitute
teacher. And we don't see him on the show, but they keep mentioning Louis Spicoli, who, of course, also tragically died back then.
Yeah. Well, he was in WCW when he died. Thank you.
Scott Hall's sidekick.
Yeah, thanks, Scott Hall.
And when they were showing the highlights of this match, I just kept thinking, how much better would Raw be right now if they did it this way, where they show, like, the two main matches in their entirety, then give everyone really short promos, and then show clips of the rest of the matches?
I would probably more than likely watch it more.
Right?
Spike got some height on that.
Yeah.
And it was safe. I mean, that was one of the safest bumps I've seen in ECW.
Yeah. I remember I'm sure you guys have read Have a Nice Day, Mick Foley's book.
Yeah.
You remember that story about how he missed his first day at college because he went to see Morocco and Snuka in the Garden?
Yep.
I missed my first day of college because I drove to Birmingham for ECW Anarchy Rules. the night that Mike Awesome tried to murder Spike Dudley.
Mike Awesome.
Yep. Sadly, also not with us.
I mean, he is one of my all-time favorite wrestlers. Who was the Japanese wrestler he always fought?
Masato Tanaka.
Masato Tanaka. Yeah. Look at that.
Cronus is a big dude to be pulling off a move like that.
That flip was awesome.
Yeah, that was a team. That was a team I wanted to see get a run.
That's a great finisher.
Yeah, that was a team I wanted to see get a run in the WCW or WWE, and instead, we got, what was it, PG-13. We're the ECW champions. We're like 120 pounds combined, and the New Age Outlaws are going to make us look like chumps. But
no, you mean that wasn't PG-13? That was
PG-13. No, what the heck
is it? Public Enemy.
No, not Public Enemy. They came in when they actually came into WWE, but before that, or WF at the time. Before that, I think it was PG-13, like the two littler guys.
Yeah, they came in of domination.
Yeah, they won the ECW championship, but then they came in like, we're too good for ECW. That's why, we're here. And they were actually on WWF television as the ECW champs.
Right, I remember that now, yeah.
And you have Killer Kowalski on right now.
Killer Kowalski.
Joel Gertner, who does a great promo right here.
And needs a shirt.
I mean,
the quintessential stud muffin.
I mean, he would have been perfect for the Attitude Era. Perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, I would have loved to see him and Val Venus together.
I remember when it was that same Tabernacle show I was talking about. It was like 3 days before Christmas. And the best line, he says... He's Joel, forget everything you know about Santa, because I'm the fat, jolly guy with all the ho-ho-hos in Atlanta.
That was great.
It was just amazing. He just had that gift of gab. It was one-of-a-kind style.
Speaking of camera work that makes me want to throw up, it's this right here.
Oh, that's what's great. That's when Chris Candido comes in. He tells him to stop it.
I did like that part. I didn't think Candido's promo was all that great, but the part where he was like, hold that camera still.
I could never tell in this period whether or not they couldn't get it right, or they were making as much fun of it as possible. But that whole stupid shaky cam thing was that whole like NYPD blue fad that kicked off. Yeah. It was like, we're going to do... You'd be like somebody be talking, and the camera is like shifting back and forth, and then it shifts to the person that's talking. And occasionally, it's like it has to shift back halfway because the other person said something again. And ECW was starting to do that a lot, and I was like, are they just trying to do that, or are they making fun of it? I can't tell.
Not saying that other wrestlers' deaths aren't incredibly sad, but Chris Candido's death is incredibly, like, pointless. Like, it was awful.
Yeah.
I mean, because he had a broken leg, and if I remember this right, he was in a cast, and was it him getting into a ring, and it caused a
blood clot to shake loose?
Yep.
I think it was because he took a plane flight.
Oh, really?
And that caused the blood clot.
And that caused it?
Yeah.
It's such
a
shame.
Yeah, I believe that was it. I could be wrong, though.
Oh, I love the no gimmicks needed catchphrase that Chris Candido just used.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was ever a thing, but it should have been.
No, it was. No, that was his thing for a long time.
Well, that's
cool. Yeah, no gimmicks.
I love the fact that the set they're shooting Joey on right now was Paul Heyman's mom's basement.
It is so good.
Exactly
right. Yeah, Heyman has always said that every time you see him with a banner, they're in the basement.
Yeah. And that's also where they edited and everything. But
everything was done.
Everything.
No matter how many takes were blown by the door opening, like, Paul, dinner's ready!
Yeah, matzo ball soup is ready!
We're filming, Mom!
Show, Mom. Well, don't tell me! Don't complain to me when your matzo ball soup is cold.
Two weeks ago on ECW.
This is an all Blue World Order show.
Yeah, it's very bluey show.
They were hot at that time.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Well, this is really pretty much at the beginning because they first appeared in November to Remember. And so that's a couple of months before this, obviously, and it just took off. I because they had been doing all these other parodies, you know, even rock bands like Kiss, and then, you know, they did Baron Von Roski and other stuff and so on and so forth. And it was getting over well, and then they came up with the idea of doing, you know, something on the New World Order, and it just took off.
Who is more out of shape in this match, Blue Meanie
or
Sandman?
The Sandman. But he did actually manage one legitimate wrestling move just now. So
always bet on Sandman to be the most out of shape.
I always thought one of the missed opportunities of ECW, they should have had Justin Credible and the Sandman be a tag team called Justin Toxicated.
That's great.
Yeah, and they talk about how Raw these days is a lot of the promo and whatnot and less of the wrestling.
I mean, this show is not that much. You get so it's very ADD. Like, it's just all over the place. Like, you don't get a full match, really.
You get stuff from 2 weeks ago, and then
if you think about it, aside from the the two matches they show in full, this show is a music video.
Oh yeah, and that's exactly what Paul was going for. And one thing that's missing from this particular episode is the string of different interview bits that they would snap back and forth to, you know, a long string of them to the
Pulp Fiction thing.
Pulp Fiction, Desert Lou music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was genius. It's like, okay, we can't put all these people on the show, but we can still give them a little bit of time to get over and keep them in the audience's mind. I mean, that was so smart.
I mean, that was Stone Cold. I mean, he couldn't wrestle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he never wrestled in ECW.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he had two matches, something like that?
He wrestled Mikey Whipwreck and
Whipwreck.
Lost.
Yeah.
And he did a three-way with Whipwreck and the Sandman.
Yep.
But, I mean, basically, he was injured the majority of the time, and Paul just said, here's a microphone to tell everybody how pissed off you are about WCW.
Yeah.
Well, they did.
I tell you, the reason this show is completely BWO is revealed on commentary when Joey says, it's the best-selling t-shirt ECW has ever had.
Hell yeah.
Yep.
Simon Dean is not dead, is he?
No,
I don't think so.
I don't believe so.
Just his career.
Is Brian Lee? Have we said that?
Now, there's some kind of...
No, Brian Lee's still around. He's still alive.
He was Belushi, Simon Dean, he's got some controversy that's come up in the last year or so, particularly with... it was on the Corny show. That got something to do with some kind of charity thing or some kind of raising money for somebody, and apparently Belushi was being a jerk about it or something. I'm not really sure the full story on that, though. Can't remember.
Yeah, but I know. But also, yeah, I know Brian Lee's still alive because he was doing some. He like semi-retired, but he was still doing something with some independent promotion to like last 2016, maybe up to 2017.
So on the Terry Funk retirement plan.
Yeah.
Actually, coming up, the one full match isn't even really a match.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we got all of Stevie and Axel.
Yeah, we did get that, but the whole thing with Sandman and Raven is not even a match.
No, not really.
Yeah, the main event.
I mean, it's
there's no bell in the main event.
I kind of feel like Brian Lee is like Chris Harris. Y'all remember Chris Harris? Like, both of them had something, but it was just never. It just never got them anywhere.
Well, Chris Harris, unfortunately, Chris Harris was about to go somewhere, and he just kind of gave up.
It is kind of weird. Yeah. Well, and they gave him the name Braden Walker.
Yeah, people have been given dumber names and gimmicks than that. But I don't know what it was with Chris Lee. Brian Lee.
The gimmick of being the Undertaker. I mean, that really, if you listen to Bruce Pritchard
and you
can
see even now, just now, Nova, like when he put his hand out, basically did the Undertaker hand motion.
Yeah. He goozled him.
But it was like, yeah, you know, I mean, you can say, yeah, okay, it was the fake Undertaker thing. And I don't know if that was, you know, something about that soured Vince or not, but you can say that. But at the same time, okay, look at Kane. What was Kane in between Kane and Jerry Lawler's dentist?
The best wrestling dentist I've ever seen.
I'll tell you what he was between those two. Fake Diesel.
Fake Diesel.
Yep. Yeah, that's true.
So being a fake something doesn't necessarily kill your career.
Yeah. So it's just
fake Kane is still in the WWE right now.
Yeah, he's going to be in the main event for the Universal title on the Royal Rumble.
Yep.
But no, that's one of the things that I lament, the loss of like the really solid territories by like the late 90s, because you had ECW, WWF.
Killer Kowalski.
Yep.
Looking confused.
Where am I?
He looked very out of... Well, and Joey's like talking to him, but you know they're not remotely in the same room.
It's the same way Chris Jericho throws the commercials on his podcast.
Yeah.
And then the camera work is so awful, like you don't even know what's going on.
Who's choking him? Is he having a seizure?
Can't tell he's being choked for half of it.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
He's a legend killer. Brian Lee sat first. Nose.
Did it before Randy.
Hey, his eyes are not crossed.
Hey, where's Moppy?
Oh, Moppy.
When did his eyes get crossed?
I don't know.
Same time Shawn Michaels did.
I think in WCW, it was one of those ones where
I'm going to assume Goldberg did it. He had a habit of causing head injuries.
Yeah.
Yeah, he took a legit nasty shot, couple shots in WCW and whatnot, or ECW, so part of the... Somewhere along the way, he got something knocked loose.
Hey, what about Raven?
A great Raven promo right here.
What about Johnny Polo?
And I love the fact that he's wearing a Sandman shirt.
Yes.
Yeah, from Vertigo.
It's the other Sandman.
Yeah.
Not the drunk one.
Wonder if he did that on purpose.
Oh, gee, I wonder, Jonathan.
I don't know.
I mean, he always wore Sandman.
Well, that's heat right there. I'm a better man than you. That's why your wife left you. I'm a better father than you. That's why your child left you.
Yeah, it's a great
that's
promo.
Heat right there, man.
This was a great feud. This might be Raven's best feud outside of the Tommy Dreamer one.
Yeah, Tommy Dreamer's got to be probably the best. But
it's the best, no question. This just is the reason why I said it. Tommy Dreamer's the best, and this might be the second best.
Yeah.
Because this one was just really wrong. So anyway, he was messing with Sandman's whole life. But yeah, Raven, man, this is one of the things that Raven and between Raven and Shane Douglas, you had two of the best heels working in this era, you know, that anchored down this show in a great, great way for me.
Raven was next to Cactus Jack. He was my favorite ECW wrestler at the time because I was that, you know, gothy hard rock teenager that he was like, he was, you know, if I was a wrestler, that'd be me, you know?
Well, see, that's the why kind of I thing. Captured I mean, I all love the hearts and Raven, minds, you know? I love that Shane was doing this sort of old school. Basically, he was doing Ric Flair. Shane was doing Ric Flair, you know, and
Shane
doing
would punch you for saying that.
Yeah. Well, he knew that. He held the triple threat, you know, instead of four horsemen.
Oh, that was great.
And, of course, he would run down Ric Flair every chance he got on the mic.
That was a hell of a faction, the triple threat.
Yeah.
Oh, I love triple threat. Both versions.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this was nut shot number 5 on the show.
Yeah, it really was.
Now you know why I drink so much beer.
Take his mind off it.
Yes.
Which title is this?
The ECW Heavyweight Championship.
Yeah. I love this. He's like, you see this? You see this? Slam his face into it. You see this? Slam his face into it. And that's why Raven is so good. It's those little simple things. Like, he got more mileage out of that than he would have out of doing a, you know, springboard double corkscrew DDT, you know?
No, Raven wouldn't have been Raven if he'd done all that crap.
Yeah. I mean, he got more mileage out of that than the people who are doing high spots or doing damage, you know, so much damage to their bodies. He's That's the difference between wrestling and being able to tell a story.
Yep. And to be a character, the one that people do or like or hate or whatever. Like you said, there were people in the crowd that hated him for everything he was because they thought him as whiny and bitchy and just that type of teenager that they all hated. And then there's others that were those type of teenagers that identified with him.
Exactly. And then there was all the fans who identified with Sandman just because they were hammered.
There's that one fan that won't get out of the way.
Get moved.
Let me take a picture of you while you're working.
Look, good. He's I got a disposable camera.
I love these old bench seats. You know, they're not bench, all connected together.
I wish he would just grab that camera, just wipe his blood on it, and give it back.
Oh, right on the merch table. That's great.
Oh, the merchandise table. Hey, wouldn't you love to have all the merchandise? Whoa. Watch out.
All the merchandise is convenient taped to the table.
Yeah.
I don't want that. Get away from me. I love how he denied that.
Yeah, nope.
Of a weapon.
That's a heel right there.
I don't need your help, you plebe.
Hey, look, here's how they got down from the balcony.
Get out of the way, lady.
It's exactly how they got down from the balcony.
See how he gingerly hit that glass? Like, I am not going through this door.
Yeah, they have to pay for that.
Yeah. This place, I'm pretty sure this place at least used to be a church. Because all the churches I've ever been in have the stairwells that look exactly like that.
It's actually a community center, apparently, from what I understand.
Huh.
Which, trust me, most community centers are built like old churches.
Right.
Yes. You're on the right mark.
Throw them out the window.
Very sturdy walls and plaster.
Well, he's an old building. You can tell it's an old building.
Oh, there's the BWO's locker room.
Yep, there it is.
Oh, this is the best.
BWO only.
Oh!
This is a weird room setup here.
Yeah.
Yeah, where is that? Like a little rail and drop down right when you walk in the door.
Well, it's kind of part of the stairwell is what it is. But it's got this little sink and so chairs and a little bench. I want to grab that BWO shirt right there.
Well, you're gonna miss it because Sandman's gonna be wearing it here in a minute.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't gonna spoil it. So.
Spoilers.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
There's another one over there.
The show is only 21 years ago. Why are you giving spoilers?
I know, right?
Barely 21 years ago.
And that whole time, the crowd has no clue what's going on.
Oh, I was missing the ECW fan cam. I'm glad it's back. Now Sandman's wearing the shirt.
It's so random. BWO now.
Yeah, Joey's commentary during this is great too. Did he beat up the entire BWO or take it? Or is
he beat them all up, stole the shirt, and came back and staggered back
What's
out?
What's this cop doing?
So what a good member of the NWO could he be?
Oh. Six pack.
Six pack. There you go. Six pack. Perfect. Six pack.
That'd be awesome.
Oof. Things have taken a turn.
Yeah, this has been all Raven so far.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's just he's just beating Sandman up, and Raven's bloodier than Sandman.
Yeah. And Sandman might not have been a great wrestler, but he took a
blood.
Great...
By the way, you know, obviously WWE have definitely completely reversed themselves on the blood thing. Did y'all see Enzo getting busted open on Monday?
Yeah. I did not see it.
Yeah,
no, but I have noticed blood back.
Yeah, he got busted open big time. He was bleeding right out of his eye and everything, and they didn't shy away from it at all. So,
and you can't teach that.
They've been slowly coming back to the blood.
Yes.
But I didn't...
on Monday, on you know, the Monday show instead of pay per view, and for them to not stop it or do anything else, I mean that's a major change. I don't see them going back to just have bloody matches left and right, but I mean that's a major change.
Maybe on a pay per view.
Maybe. The thing is that it's Vince that doesn't like the blood.
Yeah.
Well, the Royal Rumble is in Philadelphia. And
Lord. If only. I'd like to see some blood there.
Let's see some blood in the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
Just
in the Women's Royal Rumble.
Yes.
Yeah, there
you go. Is it sick that I think that would be really hot?
It would be.
Quite possibly.
Depends on whose blood we see, I guess.
I have a comment for that, but I think I'll keep it to myself. Because I'm not as concerned about whose blood it is. Just how we see
right.
it.
Right. You know, something along the lines of the Stevie Richards earlier.
Yeah.
See, I think the best stuff, I mean, this isn't a match, but this segment of wrestling is in the ring. I mean, just they do really good stuff in the ring, I think. Maybe not wrestling moves so much, but just great storytelling.
See, if this were today, then they did do wrestling moves.
You know, Chris Jericho and Benoit and RVD and you know, Chris Candido. I mean, they did have, you know, really good technical workers, but they also obviously had brawlers. But you know what? Every wrestling organization from the territories on up always had the mixture of that. So
yeah, it's the three ring circus philosophy. If you don't like the, you know, if you don't like the clowns, you might like the acrobats. If you don't like that, you might like the elephants over there. So you had a little bit of everything. Yeah, they had some comedy, they had bloody brawls, they had good wrestling, they had high flying, they had, you know, everything.
And everybody's down.
Yep. And how did Sandman get that shirt?
That's my, we'll tell you next week.
It's my favorite
We're
part.
We're out of time.
That's it, folks.
And it, that
the show is
the,
over.
The end of Hardcore TV. What'd you guys think?
I got an email, and they've loaded up like 100 Mid-Atlantic shows on the network.
I saw that.
Yeah, I got that. I got that today too.
Okay, awesome.
Nice.
I'll be going to watch some of them.
So, what did you guys think about that episode? Good, bad?
I loved it. I remember it vividly from back when I watched it back when. It's just that it had everything I liked about it. I mean, I loved the brawl with the Sandman and Raven. I love both those characters. And loved the feud that they were having at that time. Loved the BWO, so certainly loved all that stuff. You know, and the same old stuff that I like about ECW. I mean, I loved the Crash TV way that they did things. It was very different than what WCW or WWE were doing.
Which they have since stolen from. I mean,
they have.
I mean, so.
Loved this. I mean, loved them seeing the Eliminators. It had been many years since I've seen them, and the Dudleys. You know, a little bit with the Dudleys, and so yeah. I was totes in with ECW at this time. So this is fun memories for me.
Yeah, that was a perfect time capsule of 1997.
Yeah,
you know, that was like everything I remember from ECW at that time was present there. That was everything I loved about ECW.
Yep, definitely. And I'm Terry Funk. I'm Terry Funk, you like sucking down.
My eye.
One of the things that I still find funny about this, and I looking at it last night, it was like, okay. Not in the bad way, Just, you get... You know, in almost anybody else now, and even to some degree back then, but anybody else now, they're doing a wrestling program. You get like a legend on. You know, it's Killer Kowalski. This is a legend. They're going to give him like so X amount of time for sure. And this was just basically, hey, it's Killer Kowalski. Hey, what? Oh, Killer Kowalski's getting the crap beat out of him, ladies and gentlemen. And right. Killer Kowalski is no longer on the episode, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to cut to the Eliminators talking about Killer Kowalski being beaten up. And, okay, let's forget about it now.
But, you know, it's sort of the indie way of doing things where you use the people everybody know to raise your talent.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
So.
And the whole thing was paying towards... That whole thing was, you know, moving the feud between Brian Lee and Terry Funk forward. Because the whole thing is that Terry Funk is a legend himself. And so that's what Brian Lee's thing is. I'm going to get rid of you just like I'm getting rid of all these others. You know.
It is interesting that he used the Legend Killer and then, like, Randy Orton, of course, did. And it's like, is anything in wrestling original? Like, who said it before him? Like,
yeah, I was just wondering that, because Brian Lee couldn't have been the first to say that. There had to be a Legend Killer before.
Yeah, I mean, so it's like, it is funny when you think about stuff like that. I mean, art steals art, I guess, right?
I mean, there's some things you could go back to. I mean, I guess probably certainly Gorgeous George was the first to do what he did. And then others, you know, came along, you know, from the Nature Boys to the, you know, all the way to Goldust and so on and so forth. Be, you know, but I don't think there was anybody before him entirely, though, there was Ricky Starr, too, who had his own thing. He did the whole ballet thing, which was completely different. But, you know, that he didn't have the ropes or anything like that. But, yeah, I mean, you know, ultimately, you know, it's what you take from it and what you do with it, you know. Dusty, you know, Dusty, one of the most over guys in the world, he stole his speaking, part of his speaking from superstar Billy Graham.
Well, little known fact, Stevie Richards actually stole that face humping move from Lou Thesz.
Yeah.
So something that I kind of realized, like in watching it the first time, this episode, I didn't really care for it, but watching it tonight, like with you guys, is the perfect way to watch ECW, right? Like, and it's the perfect way to watch wrestling, I think. Like, yeah, with other people. I find wrestling much more interesting with other people, like watching it with other people, than just by myself.
Yeah, yeah, that's why watching it on TV will never, ever be able to equal the experience of a live event. It's the energy and the, you know, getting caught up with so many other people in the same thing.
Yep.
Very true. And I also, oddly enough, we're watching this on the WWE Network, I miss going places and watching pay-per-views either at a bar or at a friend's house.
Hooters. Yeah. We used to go to Hooters.
Hooters. Yep.
And watch them. And I don't even know what to call them now. They're not pay-per-views. They just can't name them something else.
Yeah, they still call them
network exclusives.
Yeah, network exclusives.
They gave up on that.
They're not network exclusives because you can, like, several of my friends, they can still get them. They can order them through Verizon and Comcast and whatever else. Like, when we're all off at the same time, they don't. They come over here because they don't have to spend the money for it. But,
yeah, I know that they still it still exists. Like, people still pay for pay-per-views, which boggles my mind a little bit.
Wow.
Yeah, that's one of the things, like I'll say to my friends, like, well, I don't want the network because, you know, it's like, okay, I spend about, what, $120 a year for the for the network. At least you see three of the pay-per-views at your house and pay for the pay-per-views. You've paid more than that with two pay-per-views. Just get the flipping network and enjoy all of the stuff whenever you want it.
Because really, Royal Rumble and, like, WrestleMania, I love watching those pay-per-views. Every other pay-per-view, I mean, I'm not saying they're terrible, but, like, that's worth having the network alone. And I still stand by the fact that the network's too cheap. I you know, like, most people are like, you're crazy. I wouldn't pay more for Netflix or WWE Network or whatever. It's like, but look at the content you get. Like, I'm not saying I want them to raise their rates, but when they first announced it was $10 and you got a pay-per-view, like, that is crazy. You got 12 pay-per-views, not just, and now you get whatever, 24.
Yeah. You get the major pay-per-views, and on the major pay-per-view weekends, you get your meat and potatoes pay-per-view with NXT, and then you get your razzle dazzle the next night with the main roster show.
I mean, I tell people all the time, even if you don't watch wrestling now, it's $10 a month, and you have 40 years of wrestling to watch. Yep. If it's 10, and they're like, well, I'm not going to pay the $10. Like, you don't deserve to buy anything. Like, support it. Like, if you like something, support it.
I agree.
Absolutely.
But anyway,
just don't let Vince hear you say that.
you realize that this entire episode is a commercial for the WWE Network.
Yeah, yeah, more or less. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it is partly true. I mean, in Conrad and Tony, and whenever Bruce Pritchard talks about stuff, like, they say I guess there's a way that they know the views. I don't know. I think it does rate them somehow, and sometimes the pay-per-views they talk about are watched more. Like, so, I mean, there's something to it, you know. I mean, I don't mind.
They're putting that bug in people's brains again. You know, it's I remember that. I think I'll go back and look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I mean, that's That's the whole thing of it. I mean, I love going back and watching stuff. And you don't even have to watch all of it. You just fast forward to what you want to see.
And you know what? If nothing else, in the WWE Network vault, you have Southpaw Regional Wrestling.
Oh, God, right. Yes.
Well, I think you can watch that on WWE's website, I believe, or on their YouTube channel.
Yeah.
I know it was on YouTube for a bit, but
we need more of that so bad.
I've noticed they've been promoting their YouTube and Facebook stuff a lot more lately, which I think is kind of weird, like getting away from promoting their own network.
Well, the Facebook is doing that whole mixed tag series. And to be a little topical, Miz and Maryse are getting their own USA show, which I might actually watch because I really like the Miz.
Yeah, he was talking about that on Monday. You know, he's got his own show again now. So, him and Maryse.
I'll watch it way more. I mean, there's a better chance of me watching that than, like, totally Bella's or whatever it is.
Well, when they were leading up to WrestleMania, when they were mocking Cena and
that was the
and, Bella, that stuff was great.
It was, yes. And they have action figures of that, actually. Of Miz and Maryse as John Cena and Nikki.
I was at WrestleMania this year, and one of the best moments of the whole show, well, best moment, of course, was the Hardys. But the second best was probably when John Cena was proposing in the ring. It was a great, "This is awkward."
That's great.
Yeah, boy, I tell you, Miz had a triumphant comeback on Monday. He just looks great. He talks. Miz has got it all going on, man. I'm telling you.
I do feel like people overlook him, but he is, I mean, he's probably the greatest reality star wrestler. I mean, got to be, right?
I hated the Miz for the longest time. And then, like, what really turned me around on him was that promo he cut on Talking Smack with Daniel Bryan. And I was like, holy crap, this dude is doing some of the best mic work in WWE ever, maybe.
When the whole Rock and Cena feud, I really started to like Miz during that feud.
I've been a fan of his when he was teaming with John Morrison. I thought that was a really good tag team, and they really played off each other real well. And then he did his solo run as the United States champion, and I became a fan of his Bobby's t-shirt and everything because he was a really good mid-card champion. Everybody hated him, and that's what you're supposed to do. And I just really, really enjoyed him. And he rose up to the main event level, and that was a little tricky. But then after WrestleMania, where he actually headlined WrestleMania with Cena, He kind of, you know, they didn't know what to do with him after that, and then he turned face, which was a death knell, and just lost his way for a long time. And I actually lost a lot of love for him and interest in him. But then him and Mizdow kind of brought it back a little. And then, like you said, that last year the year before last on SmackDown. And on the SmackDown Live or Talking Smack was just amazing. And then he continued that on with his Intercontinental run over here. He really has he's made the Intercontinental Championship something special again, really, in my opinion. And I really enjoy his work with it. And the Mr. Raj works, and Maryse coming back work, and yeah, I'm a big fan of his. And obviously, he's going to have a program with Roman in the meantime because he's wanting the belt back. And they actually did the Shield triple bomb on him Monday night.
Well, I think this episode was fun. I don't know if you guys enjoyed it, but I loved it. Yep. And I really think we should do another ECW-inspired show because I think they work because I don't think many people talk about ECW anymore, and they should because it was groundbreaking at the time, much like the XFL was a failure in the long run. NFL borrowed a ton of stuff from the XFL, not the coin toss,
But field cameras and
well, yeah, some the of field the... cameras, the locker room talk. I mean, NFL did not do any of that, and ECW was very much the same. I mean, they did a lot of stuff that we had mentioned during this episode that we later saw in WWE. So yeah,
it's one, and WCW.
It's
one of those. It's one of those like weird things with ECW where. It gets all the credit in the world. People sit there and talk about, oh, it was the start of Attitude and it was the start of hardcore. And like, you know, we've all said numerous times in the past, well, no, I mean, hardcore has been around for years. I mean, I grew up looking at magazines in the 80s with Bruiser Brody and Abdullah the Butcher holding on to each other, covered in blood and literally cutting each other open with a foreign object. I mean, it's been around for a long time, and the other stuff has. But what ECW nobody ever talks about is exactly that. It's like there were a lot of things that ECW did on a technical level, and everybody always knocks ECW. Oh, it was the wrestling was great, but you know, as far as the execution of the show, oh, they were so technically behind on this and this and this and that and that. But when you actually look at it, they weren't the best funded for like what they were doing, but what they were doing on a technical level is what WWF and WCW kind of started to ape.
I'll tell you what, if you look at Paul Heyman throughout his career, the thing he has always been best at, I mean, throughout, you know, when he was writing WWE and took SmackDown to be in the number one show, through the way he's cutting his promos now and everything in ECW, what he has probably been best at and like top five all time in the wrestling business is knowing what the audience wants.
Yep.
And he knew at that point that what ECW was what the audience wanted. And he gave it to them and it worked. And that's why WWE and WCW are like, oh, that's what they want. Now I get it. And he like turned them onto it. But he's always been way ahead of the curve in that department.
Yes, he is. So I guess the perfect way to end this show is a chant that we used to hear quite a bit, still hear it from time to time, but not near as often anymore. But I think a nice, hearty ECW chant is in order.
ECW. And then somewhere in the background, Mick Foley going, WCW, baby. I got you, Uncle Eric.
Uncle Eric.
I'm sitting here watching Terry, you know, looking at Terry Funk while you're saying that. I'm just imagining a Sprint commercial. Can you hear me now? You egg-sucking dog.
You lover of chickens.
AT&T's a whore.
Well, there goes our sponsorship.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.